Okay, good morning, everybody. We've got about an hour's worth of content. We're going to go rather quickly, and I'm going to share some things that have been very intriguing to me over the last 6 to 12 months concerning changes in the landscape of how people consume fitness. Before we get started, though, I want to ask, how many people do we have internationally here today with us? Raise your hand if you're international. Awesome. Thanks for coming to this session. Thanks for coming to IHRSA 2015. We appreciate that. How many people are from California or the West Coast? Okay, great. So here we go. My name is Bill McBride. I've been in this industry for about 25 plus years. When you get to a certain age, you just start not giving the exact. You just say this number plus. I started out in fitness and sales and moved into management, corporate fitness management, corporate sales, general management, regional management. It's all I've ever really done. Currently, I work for an organization called Active Sports Clubs as the president and CEO. We founded in March of 2014. A group of us with private investors purchased the assets of Club One, and I've also do some consulting and speaking around the world. The perspective I'm going to share today isn't about big box, isn't about studio, isn't about community center or hospital-based fitness center. It's about consumption of fitness and changing dynamics that go on with regard to our industry and things that can impact what we're all trying to accomplish. This deck will be made available for anybody that wants it, so don't feel like you need to take copious notes. You can leave me your card. Or obtain it through IHRSA and get the full content of the deck. Active Sports Clubs is 10 commercial health clubs, one test studio for a new high-intensity heart rate training-based small group training model, two hospital fitness centers, two large community centers, one university center, 45 corporate, residential, and commercial sites. So the perspectives I bring are not specifically based on a business channel or a membership delivery type. It's based on multiple channels. When you ask me what business I'm in, my answer is we deliver fitness. We deliver fitness, and just like a retailer has distribution channels, we have various distribution channels in how we deliver fitness. We operate in 15 states throughout the country. And before I get started, I want to do a little warm-up. This is going to be somewhat participatory. You get to ask questions. You get to make comments. You get to tell me I'm full of crap. I want this to be engaging. I want you to get something out of today's session to stimulate your thinking. So it helps me if I know that you're engaged and that we're in teams working together. So we're going to have two teams today. We're going to have Team Black and we're going to have Team Gunmetal. So raise your hands if you want to be on Team Black. Okay, you guys remember who you are. You're Team Black. Raise your hands if you want to be on Team Gunmetal. Okay. Raise your hands if you don't want cool prizes. Okay. So here's how it goes. If you ask a question, I'm going to ask you what team you're on. You're going to tell me, and that's going to dictate what prize you receive. Now, the prizes are extremely valuable. They are beautiful metal, gun metal pens, or beautiful metal gun black pens. Okay, so you get rewarded for participation, and it'll help me be more engaging. Deal? Okay, so when I say good morning, I need Team Black to scream good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay, when I say why are we here, I need Team Gun Metal to say who knows. Why are we here? Okay, we're all set. Okay, so education is not about learning facts, right? Einstein says education is about learning how to think. Learning how to think, training your mind to think differently. There's a story, lateral thinking, right? How do you come up with solutions that aren't just A, B, or C, but out of the box? How do you come up with solutions that aren't obvious, that are innovative, and that kind of bend or break the traditional way of thinking. So I want you to look at today's information from a perspective of not what we've always done in our industry, not what everybody else is doing in our industry, but what's possible based on solving a problem that you want to solve. And we all want to solve a similar problem. We want to positively impact the health and well-being of our communities. We want to make a profit. The purpose of every business is to make a profit. If you're not making a profit, you're not doing something right with regard to your value proposition. So we're going to talk a little bit about thinking about it from a different perspective today. And so, how many people work for an organization where every week it seems like you have a new strategy? Come on, you won't get fired. But it is on video. So I worked for an organization that it became so many strategies, we never knew what we were doing. And it was always changing based on opportunities. And there's a lot of good opportunities. But in our industry, most of us tend to be a little bit more entrepreneurial than the rest, a little bit more creative. It's why when we launch a new fitness program and we think it's brilliant and we take it to our fitness team and they go, no, 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 we need to change it a little bit. You know, we need to modify this, we need to modify that. We just launched, I keep calling it Shred It, but it's not Shred It, it's Body Shred, Jillian Michaels' program, right? And sometimes you get a little pushback when some of the clubs with, we don't want to do that type of program, this is why we disagree. And I think about it, I go, well, let's Google you, my fitness director, and let's Google Jillian Michaels. And let's see who seems to have more people doing their program, right? So sometimes it's hard to get things launched because of our creativity and our entrepreneurship, and we want to bend things our way. That's okay, but the key to strategy is saying no to really good ideas. If you're trying to do 5 or 6 things, you're not going to do any of them well, and you're going to be mediocre, right? So you got to do 2, 3 things that you can really excel at. And that strategy of those types of things causes you to say no to other great ideas. So strategies change, opportunities arise. That's all great and wonderful. But what's core? For me, what's core is I deliver fitness in local communities, specific to those communities and sites. Stop. So my delivery here, this site's going to be a little bit different than there based on the needs and program offerings. I've got a 2 and 3 studio model I'm working on. The second studio and the 2 model, somebody asked me, what's the second studio? The first studio is a small group training, heart rate, interval training program. But the second studio, what's that? I said it's going to change my market. If the competitive landscape is too many cycling studios, it's not going to offer cycling. It's going to have bar or yoga. But it's the second studio offering is going to change modalities based on what that community needs and what unmet needs are in that community. So having the flexibility to look at the white space and go, what can we create here? What can we do different here? Understanding who your community is. Who are you trying to serve? Do some of you feel like you're chasing an old business model at times? Where you're kind of grinding and your competitors are grinding and you're kind of chasing the same old to capture inkling of market share? Anybody follow David Porter's work or Michael Porter's work, business strategist? So in Michael Porter's work, he talks about value proposition and value chain. And the value proposition is what you charge, the rates that you charge for your services, for what you offer. The value chain is the expense load that it costs to deliver those services. So typically in a lot of business, the goal is always, we hear people say, I want to be the best. You don't want to be the best. You want to be unique and different. And you want to make a profit. Because being the best goal sometimes is a zero-sum game. I got to up my competitor, so I offer more services. He lowers his prices. I lower my prices so I can be more competitive. He has to up his services because I've upped mine. So we continuously cause each other to reduce our margin until we both are broke. That's a zero-sum game. But if my members aren't really worried about my competitor because I'm trying to get the people that wouldn't go to a club anyway or the people that would never look at that alternative, if I'm unique and different, if I'm offering something that's not common and easily comparable to everybody else. I'm going to make a profit, and I'll dictate the terms of what I'll charge and how I'll set the supply chain. Does that make sense? So the concept is really looking at your model. Is your model getting stale and old, and are your margins decreasing? And that's not the case for everybody, but some of us in highly competitive markets with very old properties that haven't really been differentiated, you look at that and you go, okay, is this business model still what needs to occur? The emergence of studios, in my opinion, is a factor of multiple things that concurrently happened, a perfect storm. There were low lease rates in retail storefront. People were looking to expand and go off on their own in a tight job market. But the bigger thing for me is the big box clubs weren't serving the population that was interested in that specialization. All things to all people tends to be a dangerous slope because you can't be, just like following too many strategies. So the emergence of the studios was based on, I want to work out with people like me. I want to feel like it's specialized programming. I want to feel like I'm getting something that I couldn't get elsewhere. And it's that differentiation. So looking at your business model and making sure you're not racing with competitors to the bottom. Spending money, more money, is not a strategy in and of itself. You've got to spend on the right things. But the bottom line is by helping more people, we win, right? So when you look at opportunities, my bigger concern is the threat of substitution. Another concept Michael Porter shares. It's not competing with my neighbor's club. You know, pick your number. Let's say it's 75% of the population are in clubs at any given time, and that's a U.S.-based number. It may be a little high, but for rounding's sake. I mean, 75% of the people aren't being served. So what's the substitution behavior that people are doing not going to clubs that I could not only not gain market share, but lose my current market share with an obsolete business model? Public fitness access is growing. How many of you have seen public fitness equipment added to public spaces along trails, cycling routes? I mean, there's some pretty cool public access fitness stuff being put in major cities right now. Functional training gyms without people that are just built along a park. Anybody seen some of these? They're emerging with more choices with fitness. Residential community expansion of services. I'm seeing high-end apartment complexes add intricate fitness offerings. Fitness centers, group studios, programming to create that surround sound, live, play in one area. Medically based fitness centers are still growing in some capacity. People are still looking for the right mix there. Corporate fitness centers, especially now with changes in healthcare and insurance, are growing, not declining. People are expanding their corporate fitness center offerings. How many of you have been to some of the university fitness centers that have been built in the last 10 years? They're freaking amazing, right? I mean, these are multi-million dollar gorgeous facilities that are serving alumni, student population, faculty, and in college towns, that's a big group of the people. It's a big population group. Community centers, nonprofits, religious-based or not, you're seeing growth in those. There's more and more JCCs still being built. There's more Ys still being built. And then you've got this self-directed aspect. The self-directed virtual apps, the virtual training, the video, the streaming, the home programs, the, you know, P90Xs of the world, anything you can imagine that's self-directed, that I don't need anybody else. I can get expertise and support, engagement, variety, and programming without you. And then you got parks and recs, which are somewhat flat in the U.S. based on government budgets. But this is a lot of people that we don't usually talk a lot about when we're talking about competing with member, health club members. And these people could be in our places using our products if we had a product that was engaging and progressive. So when I look at trends, there's a lot of trends, and I get questioned a lot. Is this going to be a fad or trend, or is this going to stay? And I don't know. A lot of people thought in the beginning that cycling, indoor cycling, was going to be a fad. How many of you have indoor cycling? Yeah. So that was pretty much a core offering. So when I look at fitness, I don't look at it from Zumba, Body Shred, Tabata, Jump, Hula Hoop, Rope, 7. I look at it from a category standpoint. And I view it as 4 primary categories. There's mind-body offerings, there's dance offerings, there's cycling or cardio offerings, and then there's functional and strength offerings. So if you look at it from that frame of reference, that I'm always going to have these 4 modalities. I may mix it up, but if I want to have my schedules have these 4 modalities. Because if I have these 4 modalities, I'm hitting a broader section of the population in balance. And sometimes we get a group fitness director or a general manager or a program director, and their modality is spinning. Okay? So we wind up being very heavy on spinning. And when you're very heavy on one modality on a class schedule where there's only certain peak times available, especially if you have only 1 or 2 studios, then you're probably neglecting some other modalities. And when you think about members, have you ever got members that complained about a class change and wrote a petition? I know, it's unheard of in this industry. So what I always look at when I talk to members about those kinds of things is I look at, yes, this may shift a little bit about what you wanted, but you got to look that I'm looking at serving people that aren't coming to the classes right now as well. So we get caught up in serving the members that use it, and we forget about the members that are members that aren't showing up. So when you look at your mix, you've got to think programming. I'm programming not as much for the members that are using it. I figured that out. Those people like what I'm doing, and they're coming. How do I program for the people not using it? Make sense? So we look at, you know, what's going to change in the future with technology? What's going to change? And I wrote an article recently for Club Insider, and I flipped the question to what's going to be the same? What's going to be the same in our industry in 5-10 years? Not what's going to be different. What are some of the things that are going to be the same? And don't steal mine. This is where you get pens. Give me some things that you think will be the same in 10 years with our industry. Mind, body? Are you black or gunmetal? You're welcome. People need human contact, right? Human contact and the energy that you get from other people is not going away. It's going to be there indefinitely. Black? Man. I thought the gunmetal would be most popular. What's another one that's not going to change? People needing people, humans needing human contact, the fact that mind-body will probably be more important, convenience, right? For bricks and mortar programming, people need to be able to get to it, get in and out quickly. Gunmetal? Good choice. What else is going to be the same? Pardon? Affordable quality. People are probably not going to decide to spend more money for something that's not as great, right? They're going to be more discerning about the value proposition of what they spend. Black. So, well, you know what this says? It says the group that chose black is far more intelligent than the group that chose gunmetal. Yes, sir. You're going to need subject matter expertise, science-based knowledge. You're going to need caliber, quality higher than ever. Black again, folks.
Results.
It's got to be results-based. It's got to deliver. It can't be just engaging and entertaining without progression and results. I'll be back. Yes, sir. Behavioral change isn't going to get easier. The fundamentals of making a change in behavior is not going to get easier.
Strength and resistance training is still going to be the absolute thing that the fitness industry can offer, but most other forms of exercise can't.
I think it'll grow. I think you're absolutely right. The importance of weight resistance training is going to be there and grow. And it's going to grow a lot based on the two things, the sedentary nature of the emerging population, as well as the elderly and the importance of bone density and balance. One of the big causes of death in our elderly is what? Broken hip from falls, right? They don't recover a lot of times from a broken hip. And so functional training and strength training and bone density training are going to always be important, especially as we get more technology-based and more sedentary. Yeah. Being one tent, working together with other solutions that help move people to activity versus looking at ourselves in a vacuum as a separate entity or a separate industry. Yes, sir. Data capturing. Member knowledge. And so data capturing is great, but it's knowledge that's important, right? It's what you do with that data. Like there's a lot of data that people have on their customer base. For years, members filled out guest registration cards and gave us an incredible amount of data, and we didn't turn it into anything after the sale. The salesperson used it to sell the membership, but we didn't use it to program and to communicate the way that member could benefit from our programming. Okay, two more. Competition? Absolutely. It's going to be a competitive space, right? And that's not going to change. Oh, gunmetal. Okay, one more and then we're moving on. No one? Social media? You think it's going to be the same in 10 years? Absolutely. Team Black. So social media or internet connection or online connection or virtual world, that stuff's just going to keep emerging to more connection. So some of the ones I said you hit on. Yep. The only one that we didn't specifically talk about, but you hit it with strength, was the medical wellness. And the fact that we're going to be programming toward an aging population that wants to remain active. And that's going on all over the world. That's going on in Russia. That's going on in China. It's going on in Europe. It's going on all over the world. So in my mind, we try to program more functional training, but more fun and more wellness. So we've kind of categorized our programming into various buckets that go a little bit deeper than the four categories I gave you before. Because we want to make sure we have the broadest appeal to that consumer base. Another one we hit on, the need for expertise. Providing something people need and can't get easily elsewhere, unique programming meeting unmet needs. We talked about all that. But what I do want to say on that, for years, the majority of my time in fitness was spent on what? Sales, marketing, and operations. I personally spent very little time on programming. And I'm not unlike many others. And where opportunities emerged, creating expansion and diversity in our industry was around what? Programming. So programming is probably the top of my list right now with regard to the order of priority on things. Because without programming, you just have another box with equipment competing with Parks and Rec, competing with fitness out by the park. So the programming piece and the expertise piece are the most critical for me. We look at our program model in these categories, six categories. It's got to be innovative, engaging, fun, science-based, lifestyle-focused, and progressive. You saw models emerge with 3,000 sites and then evaporate to 1,000 sites in a matter of 2 or 3 years in the industry. Expansive models in the past few years. And that particular model had an issue with progression. People plateaued and stayed. The body needs variety. The body needs progression. The body needs to be have the limits increased, and at the same time, the engagement level and fun factor has to be there. How many of you work out 3 times a week and you've done so for the last 10 years without question? Show of hands if you work out regularly without question. Okay. You're absolutely weird, right? You are not the normal person in our industry. You're the normal person that works in our industry, but there's all these people that don't find exercise doable, enjoyable, and they struggle. Big believer in group fitness. All the data, all the research, everything implies the facts around group fitness. Engagement, loyalty, spend, referral. We're going to talk about our retention model, and then we're going to get into some really cool stuff around what this title is really meant to portray with regard to progressive opportunities. Our retention model is you have to target people that will be your best customer. You can't take a shotgun approach. You want to find the people that are like the people that you want to serve, that you will be able to adequately serve. Your enrollment process has got to be relationship-based and detailed. Everything's got to be mapped out thoroughly so you're not leaving it to chance. The onboarding process is the first 30 days, helping the members find their way. After they've kind of found their way around, they've kind of found their community where they like to do things. That's critical. Getting that right increases lifetime loyalty. Connection is the next 60 to 90 days, or rather 31 to 90 days. This is where people form the habits. This is where people dial in and really get focused on the habits, and they become part of the routine. It fits their lifestyle. It's engaging. Okay, now here's the rub. Most people fail, right? Most people drop out of the program and stop exercising at some point. How many of you are old enough to have parents that were heavy smokers? Most people that smoke, that quit, didn't quit the first time. I know there's a lot of strong-willed people that, you know, cold turkey one time, quit. But most people quit multiple times before they were successful. Same with alcoholism, same with every other addiction. Most people fail before they adopt a new behavior. And our members show failure rates of 50, 60%, right? A lot of times they, you know, what percentage of your members that are paying dues are using your club actively? In some cases, it's 40, 50%. So those people not using it sometimes get lost and forgotten. So the presentation prior to this presentation about the programming at the Newtown Athletic Club, you know, programs like Medallia, programs like Listen 360, programs that give you feedback, programs like retention management, all those types of programs that allow you to monitor usage and track when people stumble to get them re-engaged and back in the mix are critical. So you have to have a cycle to catch members when they drop, when they fail. Without that, you're just going to churn and you're not going to get to the point you want. If saturation of likely buyers in a market is a definite space with the competition, it's important to keep and save those people, with the goal being lifetime loyalty. So when you go about that approach, there's situations you want to keep in mind. How your departments collaborate, are they operating as silos and independent business units, or are they working for the betterment of the member to use the entire space and the entire solution? If I'm a personal trainer and I talk to everybody about solutions being personal training, and I'm a group fitness and my solution for every problem is personal training, it's like somebody that, you know, the solution to everything is a hammer, right? One solution. You want somebody that again, another thing that successful clubs are doing is fitness concierge, where somebody is guiding the journey of a member to where they're getting the full solution. That, listen, you're going to need to take class once a week. You're going to need to train twice a week. You're going to need a massage every other week. You're going to want this, this, this. Then map the journey. The education and awareness. In many cases, our members are more educated about fitness than some of our staff, right? So making sure that we keep increasing the bar with education and awareness. The best marketing is grassroots marketing, local community marketing, community involvement, community events, charitable work, making your communities better, and direct outreach and coaching. Coaching those that can be of service. Any questions so far before we go into something that's really fascinating to me? Okay, so how many people know Kevin Plank and looked at some of his stuff? So Kevin Plank is the CEO of Under Armour. He's also one of the founders of Under Armour. He was a football player wearing cotton t-shirts, sweating, and he decided that he was going to create a new t-shirt for him and some teammates. And he created a stretchy t-shirt, a la polyester, that would wick away sweat versus let the sweat just sit in the cotton. So Under Armour recently has done some stuff that is absolutely fascinating to me. It's absolutely, I'm obsessed with it. My team will be quit talking about Under Armour, all right? But you haven't heard me, so I can talk about Under Armour with you. This video, which we're not going to show today, we don't have internet in here, and I didn't download the file, and I didn't want to try and do a video with two people talking and me talking for our translators, but I wanted to give you the link. This video, if you Google Kevin Plank, why is Under Armour buying mobile apps or fitness apps, you'll get this as the second or third item. It aired on Bloomberg News on February 5th, and it's an interview with Kevin Plank about why they're buying fitness applications. Okay? Has anybody seen this video or this clip? All right. You ought to watch it. It's 6 minutes long. I stopped it when he gets into the foreign currency issues that surround them because that was getting off track of the fitness delivery piece that I was really focused on. But it's worth seeing, and it's simply Google why Under Armour is buying up fitness apps if you're interested in it, but I'd highly recommend it. So Under Armour has bought three fitness apps. They bought the first one, I think, in 2011. Mike, is that right, 2011? 11 or 12, they bought the first app. And then they bought two more in the last 6 months or so. So they bought MapMyFitness. They bought Endomondo out of Copenhagen. And they bought MyFitnessPal out of San Francisco. So they bought three mobile apps, and they are an apparel company. Who are their competitors? Who are Under Armour's two major competitors? Nike and Adidas. What color? Boom. Who said Nike? That's an easy one. Do you already have a pen? Oh, okay. I was going to say you could give it to a friend or family member. Which one? So Nike and Adidas are two of their primary competitors who are also in the apparel space dealing with athletes. So here's some interesting stats on this transaction, and you'll see why this transaction makes sense for us as a group. For all three of those apps, they paid a total of $710 million U.S. $710 million for three mobile apps that don't have a business model of monetization, that don't make a profit. Okay? Now, they combine those three apps into a feeder of their own app that they built called Under Armour Record. Or Record, but I think it's... Is it Record or Record, Mike? Is it Record or Record? Record? All right, Mike, I owe you. So, Under Armour Record. So these three apps fit in to that. And they wanted to do it primarily because of access. That gave them 120 million users. Okay? So they paid $710 million to gain access to 120 million fitness users. People that engage in fitness on a regular basis. 72 million of those people were women. So 60% of those people were women. Currently, IHRSA stats have us still at 51% women, 49% men, on average around the country of the U.S. in our clubs. But the new joins have been rising steadily in number of women. And I believe women are driving the bus on our industry. But 60% of the app users are women. 4.2 million new users in January alone. They're adding 136,000 users a day. They're technology agnostic. The apps, one of the apps primarily, and the others are still emerging, but it works with over 400 devices. Fitbit, Nike Fuel, pick your device, Garmin. They're agnostic to what devices. They're just aggregating data. They now have the largest fitness community in the world that they have access to. And if you go and download the Under Armour Record app, it will take some information from you. Your name, your email, your phone number, your height, your birthday, your sex. So right out of the first handshake that you have with them, they're getting valuable information about you. And as you use the app and self-report and self-provide, they're learning more and more about you. Now, why do they care? They've determined simply that people that work out more buy more apparel for workout apparel. If people work out more, they buy more of our product. They have four areas of growth. What do you think the business of Under Armour is? What's their core? My core business is delivering fitness in local communities that are specific and applicable and relevant to those communities. What do you think Under Armour's core focus is? They what? Which? They're advertising specific to the public? Their core, if when you watch the interview, is simple. Everything they do is to sell more shirts and shoes. Period. They're not trying to compete with Apple, Google, Yahoo, Gmail, any other. They're trying to sell more shirts and shoes. What are we trying to do? Sell more memberships, deliver more programming, whatever you're trying to do, right? But you've got to be very clear on what your core is. And everything you do needs to be about that core. For Under Armour, it's to sell more shirts and shoes. These people on these apps buy more of our shirts and shoes. If we can be the company that's in contact with them, we will have access. They will buy more shirts and shoes. We'll be able to serve them better. Now, there's more to it than that. They have five areas of growth that they're focused on. We want to grow our men's apparel. We want to grow our women's apparel. We want to grow our footwear. We want to grow our international. Right now, Under Armour's gross sales are only 9% international. They have 57 stores in China. They want to get their international business up to 50%. And they have a direct-to-consumer model. How do they go direct to the consumer? So they have five key areas or initiatives to sell more shirts and shoes. Strategy, distribution channel, new way of thinking. They're a technology innovation company, but only in the sense of improving their product to sell more shirts and shoes. Now, why do I keep repeating that? Because technology and new business models and ideas and this greatest trend and all of that can be distracting. What is your core purpose? What are you trying to do? For a lot of us, sell more memberships, sell more personal training, increase market share. Ours, in a management company where we manage fitness centers for others, sometimes there's not a revenue model, it's to deliver fitness. Fitness connectivity is what they're about. They're a full price brand. They don't discount. Their customers aren't trained for discounting. Again, white space, value chain, value proposition. I'm going to have access. I'm going to segment who I go after and target. I'm going to be innovative. I'm not going to discount because I'm going to create value. They're not abandoning their athletes. Adidas is going to sign 500 or 600 athletes in the next 12 months. Their strategy is aggressively going after signing athletes as spokespeople. So, what Under Armour's doing is interesting because they also are riding a wave in technology. How many of you follow wearables? How many of you are wearing a Fitbit right now? Nike Fuel. I got my Fitbit right there. So, the new wearables are going to be baked into clothing. How many of you have seen about the new baby onesies that are being developed? Where you put your baby in a onesie, and it measures temperature, movement, and it alerts the mom in the mom's bedroom if the baby's in any kind of distress. It's like $249 or $149 for three onesies, all right? So the technology where you can monitor your baby's safety and healthy from another room. Under Armour is going to bake in sensors and technology into their apparel and shoes. You're going to see more wearables created where they're in the clothing, in the apparel, in the shoe, in the whatever. Guess what? Who are going to be the people that are most attracted to these wearables in clothing? People on those fitness apps. Can you imagine that you know technology is moving this way? You're in a position waiting for it with the money to do it, to put it in the clothing and bake it in and create that space. And you've got 120 million buyers ready to go, growing at 136,000 a day. Think about that. So they have access to the people that are going to love what's going on progressively in the future, right? That's pretty cool thinking. I recommend watching the video and reading about their strategy because it's so elegant and simple. We want to sell more shirts and shoes. We see the progression in technology. We know the consumer base that's going to be attracted to that and what we're currently doing. How do we triangulate that reality with a product offering? That thinking is what's cool and what the opportunity is. And that's why I go back to the second slide about Einstein. It's not about facts and walking out of here and go, okay, I'm going to go do X. It's about how am I going to think about my stuff in a different way based on what we know now, what we know will be certain in the future, what we suspect will happen with technology and changes in the landscape, and how do we triangulate that to create products and services and footprints that let us make a profit selling fitness, doing what we love, making our communities healthier and better? That's the question. So I think there's a lot of opportunities for us. Programming, offerings, technology, but really paying attention to the evolving consumer, how they consume information, how they consume fitness, and being really cognizant of the threat of substitution. Because to me, the threat of substitution, meaning people can substitute the results they get at our clubs by doing other things that have nothing to do with clubs, is the biggest opportunity. I appreciate you guys' time today. I'd like to take some questions, if there are any, on anything that we've covered or not. And the pens are still in play. Yeah, well. Mike, Under Armour is not public, are they? Oh, okay. Yeah, so we believe they're public because it was a Bloomberg News report. So if they're public, you should be able to buy shares. Yeah. Questions? Was this helpful? Good question. We use a product called MyZone for a lot of our programming now with our new model and our heart rate training program. And they have an app, so we can communicate and see data and measure with the trainer working with the client on the app. But the apps, to the degree the apps are viewable and accessible by the trainers. Like Fitbit, I've got my friends and my trainer on there, to where they can see my progress, and I can see my friends. So there's like this, you know, well, soft peer pressure where I want to beat them, but it's also your trainer can see how you're doing. So, man, you did great in the gym, but when you were outside the gym, you really didn't burn any calories. So your problem's not your training in the gym. Your problem's your inactivity when you're outside the gym. So the concept here is that really when you help people, it's going to be how you help them holistically in their life, not just for 3 hours when they're training. Any other questions? Yes, sir. I believe
it's Google,
but what do you think, Mike? What do you think the most successful internet company? Oh, in fitness? I don't know. Fitbit seems to have the most wide exposure. And the user interface is really clean and simple. And I've been with Fitbit forever, and I've tried some of the others. But there's so many now merging that are getting better. And then the Apple's got the fitness app that integrates all the apps on the Apple phone, on the iPhone. So, you know, the iPhone integrated app, you know, you're going to see more with that kind of thing. Fitbit's simple and elegant and expanding. But I think it's going to be less about the device and more about you picking a device that measures what you want to measure and the aggregation of the data into whatever portal. So, I mean, think about Quicken or Mint that aggregates all your banks and financial information and gives you a financial snapshot of your well-being financially. You're going to see the same kind of things with, you know, there was an app for a while called Macaw, and then you've got the iPhone app. So you're going to see more of that just brings anything together and gives you the dashboard to manage your health and well-being. You pass that down. Any other questions? I'll be hanging out. If you want to give me a business card, get the deck, ask any questions up here, that's fine too. Sir, did you have one? Under Armour is public. We've confirmed it. Okay. Hey, everybody, I appreciate you guys participating and being here today. Have a great URSA. Thank you very much.